You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Tomorrow's the first day of summer, and the weather's actually starting to feel like it. So the less time you spend over a hot stove, the better. To help us make the most of the fresh produce we've suddenly on hand, we have invited back to our show the lovely Melissa Clark. And you can find the James Beard Award-winning food writer's A Good Appetite columns in the New York Times each Wednesday. Also, follow her on Twitter, where her handle is @goodappetite. It's always a treat to have you here, Melissa.
A pleasure to be here.
And we invite our audience to join us. If you have any questions or suggestions of your own favorite summer dishes, you can call us at 212-433-9692. Write in on our show page at WNYC.org. Also, tweet us where our handle is @LeonardLopate, or find us on Facebook. Have I given people enough options?
You have given them so many options. You're going to be flooded with information.
On the other hand, many people are going to write us through email, and we're not going to get that because we can't access the email. So try those other things.
Right.
Do you like to cook in the summertime?
I like to cook all year long.
Well, it's different from other seasons because of the bounty of ingredients suddenly available after months of mostly root vegetables. But on the other hand, it's no fun to spend a lot of time in a hot kitchen.
You know, I feel like the bounty of ingredients almost makes up for the fact that you have to cook them. Do you know? I mean, I get so excited. I spend so much time with root vegetables in the winter, and then a lot of time in the spring with rhubarb and with greens. And then when summer comes, it's almost like waking up and everything's been in black and white, and then all of a sudden it's Technicolor. And it's just, there's so many options. So, yes, you don't want to do long cooked things. You don't want to do stews. You don't want to do things that you have to roast for a long time. But you do want to get your hands on all of those gorgeous fruits and vegetables, and you want to bring them into your kitchen, and you just want to have you want to do things very simply, because the thing is, they have so much flavor. I mean, the summer is when all of the fruits and vegetables we love, most of them, not the Brussels sprouts, but things like the tomatoes and the eggplant, the cucumber, all of the lettuces, all of the fruits, the strawberries right now are amazing. So buy them, bring them home, and then really do as little as possible.
I am thrilled that rhubarb and strawberries come at around the same time. They just work so well together.
I know. You've got the
Make a rhubarb compote and fresh strawberries. Oh, my.
It's the best because the strawberries are so sweet, and then you have the acidity of the rhubarb. It balances it out. For me, I like a creamy texture with that. I love, you know, yogurt or ice cream with strawberry and rhubarb custard. You can bake them into a pie. But you know what I've been doing lately? I've been using rhubarb as a savory vegetable because, in fact, it is a vegetable. It's not a fruit, even though we always pair it with strawberries. And if you take rhubarb and you cook it down, it has the same brightness as citrus, as, say, lemon or lime. And it's wonderful with all kinds of seasonal vegetables, but also with protein. It's fabulous with chicken. In fact, I have a recipe on the New York Times website for rhubarb skillet chicken with rhubarb, which is delicious. Another thing I like to do is pair it with asparagus, which we're kind of coming to the end of right now because that's more of a spring thing than a summer thing. And summer is upon us.
Well, summer is also a time for barbecuing. That's one way to get out of the hot kitchen.
Yes, exactly. You can do a lot of things on the grill. I like to do things on the grill that people don't necessarily think of as grilled. I have a recipe that I sent to you guys. It's on your website for grilled sugar snap peas. And sugar,
well,
I know.
Don't they fall through the grill?
You have to get a vegetable basket. If you don't get a vegetable basket, yes, they will. Can you imagine, though, trying to line them up, you know, sort of perpendicular to the grills? Don't do that. Just get yourself one of those. Those baskets are really great, too. If you have one, you'll find yourself using it for all kinds of things, including fish. But so what's so great about sugar snap peas when you grill them is that they don't grill all the way through. They still maintain a wonderful crunch and a wonderful, almost like the peas themselves don't cook, so the peas are raw, but the shell cooks. So you have this contrast in flavors, and when the shell cooks, it gets even sweeter, and then, of course, it caramelizes, and it gets grill marks, and it's fabulous. You can eat them plain, or you can make them into a salad with maybe some feta, some mint. Delicious and unexpected. That's another joy of summer cooking, is I like to try something new every year. I like to mix things up. I like to maybe try a technique with a familiar vegetable that I hadn't tried before.
Then there are the vegetables that grill up and almost taste like meat. If you're a vegetarian, eggplant or mushrooms.
Mushrooms, yep. I love grilled mushrooms. Again, grilled mushrooms, though, unless you're getting those giant portobello caps, put them in your vegetable basket because those, you know, you're surprised. You think you take just a regular sized mushroom, you put it on the grill, and then it loses so much water that it shrivels into nothing and it falls through. I have done this many times. So really, even though it looks like it's going to fit, put it in a vegetable basket to be sure. You don't want to lose it.
You mentioned your suggestion, some of the recipes you've given us, and you said that you're doing these as a way to say, turn expectations on their head.
Yes, exactly. I mean, another recipe that I have given you that is a summer staple. So I love cucumbers. I love them raw, but I love them even better cooked. And people
cook
don't
cucumbers.
Think, I know, people don't think to cook cucumbers. It's one of those things that I think I got the idea. I mean, I've been doing it for a while, but I'm pretty sure the first time I ever had cooked cucumbers was in a Chinese restaurant, a Szechuan restaurant, where they were very lightly cooked, and then they had a sesame Szechuan peppercorn sauce, and they were so good because cucumbers, as many people, a lot of people don't like cucumbers. They say they don't taste like anything. They just taste like water. They're very mild, which I love. And if you cook them, it actually condenses them, and you can really taste the essence of a cucumber. And a cucumber is, it's more than mild. It has a very slight bitterness, a pleasant one, and it has a sweetness at the same time, and it also has an herbal flavor, and it's just lovely when you cook them. I think I, in this recipe, I've cooked them with brown butter, and if you put brown butter on anything, it is delicious. If you put them on cucumbers, they're extra delicious, and some salmon, but you could also do it with chicken. You could do that same recipe with any other fish. Squid would be great.
And you do it on a skillet on the stovetop.
And it cooks in 10 minutes or 15 minutes maybe. It's so quick and such a good – I mean, that's a perfect summer meal because it's using seasonal ingredients. Salmon, by the way, is in season right now. A lot of the wild salmon that we get is frozen. Right now you can find it fresh, usually in this season until maybe August. July is perfect salmon month. So get yourself some fresh wild salmon and then cook it just until it's done. Don't overcook it. And the cucumbers are a lovely complement.
Part of the problem is the brown butter.
Sometimes what's the problem with brown butter?
It's delicious, but in my case, sometimes it's under brown or it burns.
Yes.
You got to do it just
right. You got to do it just right. Well, I have some tricks for brown butter. This is a good one. I learned this from a chef. So when you're making brown butter, you take your butter, and you don't need to use a lot, just a couple of tablespoons. You put it in your pan, and you listen. So, because I multitask. I am incapable of doing just one thing. I must do two things at once. So I put the butter in the pan. I turn around. I chop my garlic or my cucumbers or whatever I'm doing. And as soon as I start to hear you'll hear this spatter, 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 spatter. As soon as it dies down, you know that the brown butter is ready. Because what you're doing when you're making brown butter is essentially cooking out all of the water content, right? So it's boiling furiously. And as it starts to settle down, you know that you've boiled the water out. You're left with this butter that has all the milk solids have fallen to the bottom. They're nutty. They're toasty. They're so much more flavorful than regular melted butter. And that's when you turn the heat off. Or you add something else to the pan to keep cooking it, to you know, and to change the temperature.
And then you cook the salmon with it. You know, you usually start with the skin side down, but you're starting with the skin side up?
Well, okay, so you could do it either way. If you start with the skin side down, often the fish starts to contract and the skin, you know how the skin will curl?
Yeah, but it gets nice and crunchy.
That's true. Okay, here's a secret. Unless you deep fry fish skin, like it has to be super crunchy for me to like it. I don't like that in-between fish skin. So, but I'd rather have a nice looking fillet because I'm probably not going to eat the skin. So I'll start with if you start with the flesh side down, the skin's less likely to curl, but it is less likely to get crisp. So for you, I'd say do it the other way around. Listeners, do whatever you want. Or you could buy skinless salmon if you prefer.
Now, thinking about brown butter, have you seen the current issue of Time Magazine, which is about how butter is actually good for you after all those years of being told it was bad for you?
Thank God. I feel like I have known this in my heart for a very long time. I never believed butter was bad for me. So yes, I've been following all of the literature on that, and I think it's great. Brown butter is another way to enjoy it. And the thing about brown butter is you can use less because it has more flavor than regular butter. Of course, now that we can use as much as we want. I mean, not really. But now that we are invited to enjoy butter as part of a good, healthy diet in moderation, brown butter is a terrific way to use it.
Salmon is another one of those things that is tricky to cook because you can undercook it or you can overcook it.
Yeah.
How do you get it? How do you know when it's just right? Did a chef give you some tip on that as well?
I feel like probably, if I can think of which chef it was. Okay, the way that I test for salmon is I like it slightly underdone, just ever so slightly underdone.
A little red in the middle.
Just a little red in the middle. I mean, mostly it should be cooked through. You don't really want it. You don't want it rare like tuna, which I like very rare. So I just take a sharp knife, And you just go. And here, the trick to testing salmon is when you're looking at the piece of fish, you'll see the fillet has little lines in it. They're like these, what's the proper term for that? If anybody knows the proper term for the way the fish comes together, maybe it's the muscle structure. And you kind of dig your knife in between. You'll see it start to, you'll see a place, there'll be a slight opening. And you dig your knife right in there. So you're not actually cutting through the flesh. You're kind of going in through the side. And you just take a little peek because it's it gives you a good view down to the end of the down to the bottom of the fish, and it also doesn't, you know, you won't massacre your fillet and then serve something that looks like it's a tuna salad or something like that. It's a very neat way to check your fish, and you're just looking right inside, and you can see. Another good way is look at the side of the fish. If you have a fillet that's, if you're not using a steak, you, and this I did learn from a chef. In fact, I learned it from Bruce Bromberg of Blue Ribbon Restaurant. Look at the, you put your salmon in your pan, look at the side, and you'll see it'll, when it's cooked through, it'll look like it's cooked through. You won't see any red on the side. That's a good one.
My guest is Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer who writes the Wednesday Good Appetite Dining Section column for the New York Times, and it's also at newyorktimes.com. You can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is at Good Appetite. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. You have that what we're just talking about is one of the recipes you supplied us with. We'll talk about a couple of others, but I want to address something a listener wrote in to say. One of the best things I've done, this listener said, this summer is grow some mint in a pot on my windowsill. It's great for cocktails and just about anything else. Are there any other herbs that you recommend growing on your own?
Well, mint is the, one of the best because it really does grow like a weed. And it will, to any sunny window, if you have a little bit, just a small pot, it will take over. It's fabulous. But basil. I mean, basil is one of my favorite summer herbs. Basil is also great in cocktails. In fact, you can use basil in a lot of cocktails where you'd normally use mint. Substitute basil. It's a different taste, a little more spicy. And that grows really, as long as you have enough sunshine and you water it, basil will grow just as easily as mint.
And if you have a big enough pot, you can grow enough basil to make pesto.
You can. And you can actually, if you like, you can just, what is nice to do is if you get one of those big pots and do several herbs in it at the same time. Although don't put the mint in the same pot with the basil because the mint will take over. But you can do a big pot and you can have basil. Thyme is really great, especially lemon thyme. Tarragon is lovely.
Rosemary.
And rosemary. And you can put them all in the same pot. They will live happily together. I wouldn't recommend, parsley is good, but it's so easy to get. So I'd say don't waste your window space on that.
Now, you've just come back from vacation. Do you do any cooking when you go on vacation?
Yes. In fact, I get a little crazy when I go on vacation because I want to cook as much as possible. I love going to farmers markets in different places. We were in Colorado, and we were up in the mountains, and so I was so excited to go to the farmers market. I was going to buy everything that they had in Breckenridge, and unfortunately, the seasons aren't as advanced there as they are here. So when I got there, it was only a few things. There was a little bit of lettuce, and I couldn't cook these epic meals that I was hoping to do, but still, what I got was amazing, and we filled it out with the supermarket. And I have a technique. Whenever I go on vacation and I'm cooking, I love to buy sausages because they come, you buy good local sausages if you can get them, and I could. They come pre-seasoned. You can broil them really quickly. You don't need to buy a lot of spices. You don't want to buy things in jars and packets. You want to just buy as little as possible and use it up. It's almost like the game. It's like how few things can I buy and how many meals can I make out of it? So sausages are great. Often places that you go when you're staying in like a rental or whatever, they don't have salad spinners. So, which is, I think everybody should have a salad spinner. But I buy the pre-washed greens in that case, and I will use those. I'll saute them. I'll use them in salads. And then with my sausages, one of my favorite things to do is to do kale. So I'll buy baby kale. I'll make a salad, and I'll put the hot sausages and all that sausage grease that comes out when you broil them, and I'll use that as the dressing. It's almost like a spinach bacon salad, except it's a sausage kale salad. It's very similar, and that's one of those things which you can do with pretty much three ingredients, well, maybe four: kale, lemon, olive oil, and sausages.
A listener has called in to tell us that those lines on the fish are plates. That's what.
Thank you. Thank you for telling us that. Okay, so the plates. You want to get in right in between the plates, and that's where you want to put your knife in, and that's it makes a very neat cut, and it's an easy way to see into the fish.
And another listener, Katie in Brooklyn, left a comment saying that Julia Child had a recipe for cooking cucumbers. She put them in vinegar and salt for an hour or so, and then cooked them in butter and herbs, or as Julia would have said, herbs.
That sounds great. You could use, in fact, I would use a really good flavorful vinegar for that, maybe an apple cider vinegar or a good balsamic, not a bad balsamic, you know, a nice one.
My guest is Melissa Clark, and we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Let It Lopate. We'll continue our conversation and talk about the other two recipes that Melissa has suggested for these coming months right after we return. We're back with Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer whose article, A Good Appetite, appears every Wednesday in the New York Times dining section, also at newyorktimes.com. You can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is at Good Appetite, all lowercase, one word, of course. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can find the recipes that we will be discussing on our show page at WNYC.org. A number of people feel squeamish about serving things raw like lamb and beef, but you suggest making them into kibbeh and tartare.
Yeah, that's another thing.
What's kibbeh?
Oh, kibbeh is basically lamb tartare.
I remember
tartare.
Guy Kibbeh. Remember him, the actor?
I do not remember him. Did he like lamb?
I don't know.
I hope so.
I heard he was sheepish at times.
Good one. So lamb kibbeh is basically highly spiced lamb, like you'd make a beef tartare, except you use Middle Eastern spices. It's a Middle Eastern dish. You can also use bulgur in it. And bulgur is great for the summer because you don't have to cook it. And couscous, too. You can pour boiling water on top of them and in the grains in the bowl, let them sit, and then they will plump and swell without having to put them on the stove. And you just mix that together and you make a paste. And kibbeh is one of those great lamb dishes that you can eat either raw. And I love it raw, but you can also cook it. So you can serve it, which is great to serve to guests if you're not sure if they will really eat the raw lamb kibbeh. I'm not sure about that one over there. And then you can broil some of them and they'll cook in a few minutes and serve some of it to the more adventuresome people who you've invited over, and they'll eat it raw. And what's so great about, and same, well, tartare, obviously, you want to eat raw. What's so great about serving raw
meat, how do you know whether you can serve something raw? It has to be very fresh.
The most important thing is sourcing it. I mean, that's your job, because you're not spending a lot of time. Obviously, you're not spending any time cooking it. So spend your time sourcing it. It's very important that you're not going to go to the supermarket. You're going to go to a trusted butcher. You're going to tell that butcher that you want to eat this raw so that you make sure you're getting something very, very fresh, very good, and you want it ground pretty much in front of you. You don't want the stuff ground ahead of time. So go to your butcher, ask them to grind it, you know, right there when you get there. Don't serve it to anybody who, you know, might have a compromised immune system or might be pregnant. You know, make sure you're serving it to people who are as excited about it as you are and who are willing to partake.
You also suggest eating some vegetables we normally cook raw, like eggplant and corn.
Yes. Well,
eggplant,
raw corn.
Does eggplant raw have any flavor?
You know, okay, this is one. I learned this from a friend from Japan. And eggplant raw is, it tastes like eggplant. I mean, it's absolutely delicious. What you do is you kind of cure it. So you take your eggplant. This is important. You need to get sweet, slim eggplants that don't have a lot of seeds, either Japanese, Chinese, or Italian.
Those long, skinny ones.
Yeah, the long, skinny ones. And you slice them paper thin. This is what you take out your mandolin to do, unless you have excellent knife skills, and then you really need to, you know, slice them as thinly as possible.
Do you peel them first?
You don't have to peel them, because they're beautiful, those little bit of purple on the outside, and you make them into a raw eggplant salad. What you do is you take salt, and you massage the salt into the eggplant, and you can put herbs in that as well, kind of chop up some herbs, shiso if you're thinking Japan, or mint is fabulous. Put it in the fridge and let it sit. And it's, you know, whenever you add salt to something, it kind of cures / cooks it. It tastes like the essence of eggplant. It tastes like eggplant times 10. If you love eggplant, you will love this dish. It's not the dish to convert eggplant haters, though, so only serve it to eggplant fans.
When you say salt, some people distinguish between table salt and kosher salt, but if you go to some of the fancier stores these days, there's pink salts, there's black salts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's sea salts of various types. It depends on what sea.
Yeah,
the
they all have different,
from.
Right, they have different flavors because of the mineral content. Some of them have, you know, a lot more of one mineral than the other, and they taste completely different.
So
it's
do
really
you have
exciting.
Favorites?
Well, pink salt is a little bit, I love pink salt, but it has a very strong personality. You have to use it. Sometimes I will mix pink salt with regular sea salt if I just want a hint of that flavor. It's very deeply oceany. It has a slight touch of sulfur, not in a bad way, but just a little bit. So you want to be careful about the pink salt, although it is great. Black salt also, same thing. A little bit goes a long way. For this dish, I would recommend, because this dish is all about the eggplant. It's about showcasing eggplant. So I would say use a neutral salt, a fine sea salt, or a kosher salt would do the trick here.
And how long do you leave it in the refrigerator? A
couple of hours, or even an hour is enough. You don't need to leave it in there that long. And then taste the eggplant.
No olive oil or vinegar?
You dress it after. So first you cure it with the herbs. Then you take it out, you taste it. If it seems a bit salty, you could rinse the eggplant, or you don't have to, depending on, you know. This is one of those dishes that you don't know how much salt the eggplant's going to take. You don't know how porous the flesh is. So you really kind of need to do it by feel. If you taste it and it doesn't taste like it, you taste it and you think, this doesn't taste like anything, add a little more salt and put it back in the fridge for another half an hour and then try it again, or even 15 minutes and then try it again.
And then on the other hand, you suggest grilling lettuces,
the grilled Caesar salad. Yeah, the grilled Caesar salad is one of those fabulous summer dishes that, you know, you're not going to make grilled Caesar salad in the winter, even though I think of Caesar salad as a very wintry salad. So to make it appropriate for summer, you grill your romaine hearts. And the trick is to grill them, but not all the way through. You want them to be cooked on the outside, but still raw and crisp on the inside. And then it takes that Caesar dressing so beautifully. Grilled radicchio is another one of my favorites. Take radicchio wedges, cut them up, put olive oil and salt on them, and then grill them. And that is such a nice summer dish. That's another thing to serve with sausages, by the way. Delicious with sausages.
I'm wondering whether our listeners have any thoughts about favorite summer vegetables and fruits.
I'd love to hear if anybody would like to call in and tell us some things that vegetables that we don't normally grill that they grill. I mean, I feel like when you get grilled vegetables, you always see the same ones. You see eggplant, you see summer squash, and you see, well, pretty much those are the two big, and mushrooms. Those are the three vegetables. Corn also you see grilled. But I love to, you know, like with the sugar snap peas, or actually I've never grilled cucumbers, but I'm going to try it, to try to expand my grilling horizons and try something new.
Although there are a lot of listeners, I'm sure, who have no space to put a grill.
I know.
Can you grill indoors?
You can use a grill pan. A grill pan is great. The trick to a grill pan is you need to get it hot enough. I think a lot of people are impatient and they can't wait to have dinner, so they don't heat up the grill pan. But just like with a cast iron pan, put it on your stove, turn the heat on, and then walk away and do something else for a good 15 minutes. Let that thing get super hot. If you have an vent, turn your vent on, because it will smoke if you add a little bit of fat to the pan, like if you've oiled your mushrooms that you're going to grill or oiled your asparagus. And that is really how you're going to get a good sear. So just let it go. Take your time. And then also, here's another thing. When you put your vegetables on that hot grill pan, don't turn them. You know, I always want to turn them. I always want to get in there. I want to play with my food. Sit on your hands or go multitask or go do something else. Send some emails.
Go listen for the sizzle of the butter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You've used
all
your senses.
And why don't you turn them?
Wait till you smell them, then you turn them. Because otherwise you're not going to – if you keep turning them, you're just not going to get the deep caramelized grill marks that are so beautiful and also really tasty. If you keep turning them, you'll get like a little grill mark here, a little grill mark there. You won't really let it do its thing.
My guest is Melissa Clark. I'm sure you've read her columns in the New York Times every Wednesday, the Good Appetite columns. You can also find them at newyorktimes.com, and you can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is @GoodAppetite. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Cherry on Twitter asks, how do you make Indian butter, the Indian butter that's called ghee?
That is a great question, since we were just talking about brown butter.
Do you use ghee in just regular cooking?
You know,
is it a good substitute?
It's great. I mean, it's also called clarified butter. It's what's great about it is that it has a higher smoke point, so you can use it to saute protein, fish, or meat, or even vegetables, and you can put the heat up high and it's not going to burn. So what it is to make it, it's really simple. It's kind of like making brown butter, but you don't let the milk solids get brown. You melt your butter, and then you let it keep melting past the point where, you know, they always say melt your butter until you can see the foam on top. You don't want to see that foam on top. You want to do it over low heat, because you don't want it to brown. You want that foam to completely subside. Then you turn off the heat and let it sit for a few minutes, and that settles it. So all of that foam, all of those milk solids, and all the moisture kind of fall to the bottom of the butter. And then you very carefully pour the butter, the oil, which is collected on top, you pour that off, and you leave those milk solids in the pan. And that's how you make clarified butter. And what's great about it is it'll also last in your fridge for weeks, if not months. You can make it, and then you'll always have it on hand. Use it for sauteing. You can also use it for baking, which is, it makes a fabulous shortbread because it has a it's like using European butter. It's sort of like a cheap way to make European butter because it has less moisture content. So it's a very rich cookie.
I have a whole bunch of what I call ramp butter in my freezer.
Oh, yes.
Because ramps have a very short season.
That is a great way to preserve them.
And I just dice up the ramps, put it in the food processor with butter, and then roll it into some, saran wrap.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And put it in a freezer bag.
Do you just juice ramps and butter, a little pinch of salt maybe, or lemon juice, or no, you just pure?
You know, the ramps give it such a strong flavor.
Yeah.
And then you can cook with it, by the way. Cooking eggs in ramp butter is just fabulous. Put
fish.
It over toast.
Oh, I would love it.
Or with fish.
That sounds great.
And by the way, Jim from Long Island says that you can tell where the salmon is done when a white substance, the connective tissue, accumulates.
Oh, yes. Okay, I've noticed that, too. That's a good point. This happens especially if you're using high heat. Sometimes you don't see it. If you're cooking salmon over low heat, you may not see that white, stuff on top. But if you cook salmon really high, sometimes you'll see that there's this little white substance. It almost looks like foam, and it comes to the top of the salmon, and that's an indication that the fish is cooked. The problem is that sometimes once you see that your fish may be cooked perfectly, it also might be overcooked. So if you see that, take it off the heat right away.
We've talked about two of the recipes you've supplied us with, the grilled sugar snap peas with feta and mint, and also seared wild salmon with brown butter cucumbers. The third one is summer squash and red onion salad with pine nuts. You pre-treat the onion with lemon juice?
Oh, this is a good trick. I learned it from a chef. Yes, I did, from Peter Burley. And what's so great about this trick is that sometimes raw onions can taste very, very strong and pungent. Sometimes they're mild. It depends on how long the onion's been sitting around in your pantry. If you're getting a nice spring onion right now, you may not have to do this. But you slice your onions, you add a little bit of acid, so either vinegar or lemon juice, and a pinch of salt. And what happens is the onions soften. It's almost like a quick pickle, but they also mellow, and they lose that sharp oniony bite. So what's great about it is you can use a lot more of them. And I mean, a sweet onion without that bite is such a good ingredient to use a lot of in a salad. It adds texture, it adds flavor. And so this step just eliminates any chance of it having too much of a sharpness. And then you drain off your lemon juice, and you save the lemon juice to make the vinaigrette. So the lemon juice takes on the oniony quality, and the onion becomes mellow. It's a great, it's very wonderful symbiotic relationship that you have there.
I'm very sad that lemons are an endangered species right now.
I know, and limes too. We need to worry about our citrus.
Do you need to roast the pine nuts?
I always toast my pine nuts. Toasted pine nuts taste so much better than raw pine nuts. A trick for doing that is whenever I'm cooking a dish, I mean, this is mostly pine nuts are the only thing you're going to cook in this. This is a raw salad. But say that you're going to cook a dish and you want to use pine nuts as the garnish, always do the pine nuts first. Do them in the pan because you do them without any fat. And then you can use the same pan to cook whatever you're cooking, and you don't have to clean out the pan. So that's just a start out. Heat your pan, add your pine nuts, let them go in just until they're fragrant, and then pour them out on a plate, and then your pan will be hot and ready to accept the oil for whatever you're going to saute.
A listener from San Francisco, Katie, I think is name, wants to know about grilling fruit, peaches and pineapple.
Yeah. Oh, that is grilled fruit. It's
just
one of my
slice it and just stick it on the
grill? I don't even
slice
it. Well, I slice it in half, but you don't want to do too many slices. Even if you do have a vegetable basket, I think it's better to just have the fruit and really get them as close to – you want them as close to the fire as possible. So if you can get peaches and pineapple, I do them right on the grill because they're big enough. They're not going to fall through. For smaller things like grilled plums are delicious. That you do. You have to have them. And then I would do those in a grill basket. And they don't need, you can do, brush them with a little bit of brown sugar syrup, which is you just make by, you take your brown sugar and you melt it with maybe a tablespoon of rum, or you could just use orange juice or water, and you brush the fruit with it as it's grilling. It's almost like a basting sauce. You don't even have to. You can just take the raw fruit, put it on the grill, and it just, the natural sweetness of the fruit becomes even sweeter, and it's fabulous over ice cream.
Doug from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Leonard and Melissa, I love you guys. Thank you for this discussion today. I recently got some Swiss chard and some radishes at a farmer's market in Chelsea on 23rd and 9th, and I was wondering if I can grill those.
You know, grilled radishes sound fabulous. I broil radishes all the time. I saute radishes. So I would say absolutely. Do you have one of those vegetable baskets?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so I would have the radishes. I would toss them with a little oil and a little bit of salt, and I would absolutely grill them. And then you said you got chard, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what I would do. In fact, you can make a fabulous salad with this. Cut the greens off of the stems and grill the stems. That is such a good dish. You just, again, oil, salt, put them in the vegetable basket, grill them, and then once they're grilled, as soon as they're cool enough to handle, you want to slice them up, toss them with your radishes, and then take your Swiss chard leaves, tear them into bits, and add that to the salad. They'll wilt just a little bit. Some of them will stay raw, and add a lot of olive oil, lemon juice, salt, pepper, and maybe, do you eat cheese? Do you like cheese? Maybe some crumbled feta or some ricotta salata or big slices of mozzarella or bocconcini. That would be such a good dinner.
Okay, Doug.
Does that sound good?
That sounds amazing.
Okay, good.
Another listener suggests doing that with fennel oil and some salt.
I forgot about fennel. Fennel is one of my favorite grilled vegetables. It is, I like it to, you can do it in big chunks, but I like to slice it maybe into 1-inch pieces and then put it in my grill basket with salt and olive oil. And fennel is also really good with some red chili flakes tossed right in there. And then when it comes off the grill, olive oil, lemon, and maybe some shaved Parmesan. That is one of my favorite summer salads, and I completely forgot about it until you mentioned it. Thank you.
I want to slip one other listener in here. Barbara. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. We just returned from Italy, and we had wonderful fried artichokes. Is there any way you can prepare those on the grill? Any suggestions?
Artichokes are great grilled. Were they babies or were they big ones?
They were babies.
Yeah, that's the thing. Okay, so you want to get tender baby artichokes. And when you clean baby artichokes, you don't have to take out the choke. You just have to pull off some of the outer leaves, and then you have to trim the stems, and then you have them, toss them with olive oil, toss them with salt. And the trick to doing artichokes on the grill is that you start them on direct heat. So you do right over, build a big fire, or do it on high heat on a gas grill. And if they're not cooking all the way through, just move them to the side and finish cooking them on indirect heat, because you want them soft in the center and you want them really burnished and crunchy and brown on the outside. Grilled artichokes are another one of those vegetables. Great grilled, great cooked, and also great slivered and sliced raw for a salad.
We're starting to see zucchini flowers.
Mm.
How do you prepare them without destroying the flour?
Well, I mean, the standard way is to deep fry them. You know, which is great. I love deep fried zucchini flowers. But you know what I like to do even better? I like them raw. It's another thing that is so good raw. Because when they are raw, they are sweet. They taste like, they really taste like zucchini that's been almost covered in a little bit of sugar. They're so sweet and delicious. So you take your zucchini flour, you shake them out to make sure there are no bugs in there, because it's a good hiding place for bugs. Don't rinse them, because you don't want to introduce moisture. And then just take a knife, open them up very delicately. Stuff them with something delicious like burrata or goat cheese or olive tapenade or a combination of all of those things, and then close them up and put them on a platter, a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of sea salt, and serve them to your guests as hors d'oeuvres, and it'll be a memorable thing. It'll be so beautiful. Imagine a big platter filled with zucchini flowers. Your guests don't know that there's something in the middle, and they just take a bite. It's this wonderful present.
Scapes are in season now, and a listener wants to know how you use them.
Scapes are funny.
They're members of the garlic family.
They are. So what they are is that when you're growing garlic, before the bulb develops, or as the bulb develops, a garlic scape comes out of the central core. It actually is the central core of the garlic. It grows out, and that becomes the garlic flower. And farmers realized, they started harvesting the scapes, that when you get them young and tender before they start to dry out, they taste like green. They taste like garlic plus green, plus freshness, plus herbs. And they're tender enough to sauté. You can sliver them up and serve them raw. My favorite thing to do with them is to make garlic scape pesto. Because instead of using regular garlic, you're using garlic. Garlic scapes have a milder flavor. They also have that herbal quality, so you don't need to use basil along with it. You just grind up the garlic scapes, and you add your cheese, and you add your nuts, and it's wonderful.
We have very little time, but I wanted to sneak Ariel from Brooklyn in. Hi, Ariel. Can you make it quick?
Hi. Hello?
Yes, go.
Hi. I wanted to add grilled okra.
Ooh, good one. Good one. Grilled okra is great. Okra is, again, a summer vegetable that most people, you usually see it deep fried, right? Or you see it stewed. Grilling is wonderful because, again, you get that charred flavor on the outside. And all you have to do is salt it ahead of time. It'll draw out the kind of gumminess. And then you oil it, throw it on the grill, and it is such a good way to serve okra. Good one.
Although
thank you.
The trick, as Thomas Keller has pointed out, is finding the right amount of salt for each different thing.
That is very true, and that's where you have to use your gut. Just taste as you go.
Melissa Clark is the James Beard Award-winning food writer responsible for A Good Appetite in the Wednesday dining section for the New York Times, newyorktimes.com. She's also written or co-authored many, many cookbooks, and you can follow her on Twitter where her handle is @GoodAppetite. It's always a pleasure to have you on our show.
Great to be here. Thank you.